Well, today, as you all know, is one of the most important dates. It's Friday the 13th. And with me is James Norton, who always likes to come out on a Friday the 13th. Right, Jimbo?
Yep.
Yep. I'm Tom Baker. You're listening to Law and Gospel on this Friday, the 13th of October, 2006. And it's open line Friday. So we're going to, right up front, talk about the phone numbers, 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. And with me, I have a guest because we're going out to eat tonight, aren't we?
I sure hope so.
At one of the highest level restaurants in St. Louis. What, Country Buffet?
Uh-huh.
Or White Castle? Well, one of those.
No, White Castle I wouldn't touch.
I wouldn't, and you don't like Chinese either. So.
Nope.
James Norton's been with me, I think, one or two times before this. He is a pastor of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. In fact, I spoke up at his congregation last week. I don't think I left any impression at all there, did I?
Let's not talk about that.
All righty. And he's in town.
They're listening today.
They are?
Oh, yes.
Oh, they knew you were going to be on?
No.
No, okay. Jim, first of all, you are also involved with the military. Give us your rank and how you're involved with them.
Oh, well, I'm a retired chaplain colonel. I finished up at Fort Huachuca, Arizona, 6 months from November of 05 to April of 06. Now I'm on the retired list. So now I'm only a pastor.
Only a pastor.
Only a pastor.
Thank you very much for
You're welcome.
When you were involved with the military, you were active a few times?
I was with the National Guard from 81 to 05. Prior to that, I was in the Army as enlisted from 66 to 68 with a tour in Vietnam.
That must have been interesting.
We could talk about that.
We could we? Well, this is on Law and Gospel. There's been a lot of conversation about the Amish forgiving the individual, even though he committed suicide, in the killing of their children. And there are some people who wonder, if we have such a loving God in the person and work of Jesus Christ, how can we ever go to war against somebody? As a chaplain, did you ever get that question?
No, but you're talking about two kingdoms.
Two kingdoms, and what do you mean by that?
The kingdom of the left and the kingdom of the right. The government versus the church. And the government is supposed to protect the people, and sometimes to do that you have to go to war.
And you really are talking about a law and gospel distinction for the kingdom of the left, which we find, for instance, in Romans 13, mm-hmm. where God tells us to obey those in authority over us, is in contrast to the passage in John, the end of John, where Jesus talks about another kingdom where the task is the keys to the kingdom of heaven that we can open and close by means of forgiveness or retaining the forgiveness of sins.
Right.
So as a pastor, was it hard to keep those two kingdoms separate?
No. The government has the responsibility to do what it's supposed to do. And the church is responsible to do what it's supposed to do. So from my view, it's not hard to keep the two distinct. And God does it, so no, it's not hard at all.
You may be aware, I'm sure you are, and I just thought of this. One of the emails I received a couple of months ago was something coming down. I don't know which armed forces it was, Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines, about chaplains not being able to mention the name of Jesus?
Ah, yes.
Give us a little background of that and what your thinking is and how did it end up being decided?
When I was still in, there was a Navy chaplain who brought suit against the government because he was not being allowed by his superiors in a prayer situation to close a prayer or to mention Jesus. And I always thought this a little odd because there's an Army regulation that says that a chaplain can or must operate in the military according to the dictates of his conscience and the teachings of his church.
Oh, okay.
So in other words, I have to be a Missouri Synod Lutheran, even in the military.
But wasn't there a ruling that for a while said you weren't allowed to?
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay. So what do you do when you're dealing with, say, another Christian? That's not too much of a problem.
No.
Who's not Lutheran. But what happens if, for instance, a Muslim soldier is wounded? How do you minister to him?
He's a wounded soldier.
Mm-hmm.
And you minister to him. You don't give him communion, of course.
Right.
But he's a wounded soldier, and you're a chaplain, so you take care of him, and you do for him what you can. And
well, would you talk about God from his point of view or from
my point of view? I'm not a Muslim, so I can't tell him what a Muslim believes.
Yeah.
And I'm not supposed to. I don't have to. And I can't. And so I will give him any comfort that I can as a Lutheran pastor.
Did you ever run into a problem where a soldier took umbrage at you and what you were saying?
No.
Really?
No.
Interesting.
No, I'm sure some have. But if you're in a war situation and you're dealing with wounded, 9 times out of 10, they aren't going to give you any trouble.
Mm-hmm.
They're just glad to see you.
Yes, right.
So that's not a problem. The problem comes in non-wartime scenarios when people have too much time and people get nitpicky about who says what, and they forget that a chaplain is protected by Army regulation from any of that stuff.
Really?
Really, yeah. So I really don't understand what the brouhaha is all about in the Navy. I had one instance when I was in the Guard in Springfield. I was doing some pro bono work for the IMA, the students.
What's IMA?
Illinois Military Academy.
Okay.
I'd go there once a month on a Saturday and give them a service. And just so happens that this one period of time, the commander was Jewish.
My.
And after about a month, month and a half or 2 months, he told me I didn't have to come back. But he can do that.
Mm-hmm.
But I had done nothing wrong.
No.
No.
Now, was that a suggestion or an order that you didn't come back?
Well, I wasn't under orders to do this. This was entirely voluntary.
Uh-huh.
So it was just his wish that I didn't do that anymore.
Yes.
And that's fine with me. I have plenty to do, so I didn't do it anymore.
Yes, I understand that.
But the soldiers didn't have a problem. It was the commander.
Yes. And because of his Jewish background, I could understand
evidently.
That.
Yeah, yeah.
One of the things I find as I go around, and I'm speaking primarily in the spiritual realm to congregations. In fact, I just set up a plane trip out to Olympia, Washington, where there is a large Christian congregation that is not Lutheran, but they're becoming more and more Lutheran as they read about Lutheran materials. And one of the things that they tell me is how astounded they were to discover, even though they were in the Christian religion, so to speak, for so long, how astounded they were to discover Lutheranism and how unique it was in our teaching about justification by grace through faith, apart from works, and especially the law-gospel dynamic. Did you find a lot of soldiers seeming to say to you, this is about the first time I ever really heard it, the way you're talking about it?
Yeah, probably a few times when you start talking about how you become righteous and our unique perspective on it. Yeah, the way I would do a service is I'd have the service, and it'd be a Lutheran-type service without a hymnal. And then we'd have kind of a little question-answer period a lot of times, and that's when this would come out.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, a lot of times, a few times, they were a little bit mystified as to where I was coming from.
Yes, I find this again and again, even on the radio station, 10 years here now, and yet, because we're getting new listeners each and every week, that there are so many out there who just are perplexed when they hear the Reformation point of view, as though they think it is something so novel that it's not part of the Bible, when in reality all we're trying to do is return to what the Bible really says.
Right. Well, a lot of people are still stuck on works. If I'm just a good boy or a good girl, God will be happy.
And that can be understandable, particularly in the realm of soldiering, because did you find that many people might interpret God along the same lines that they interpret the commander over them?
Keep the commander happy.
You keep the commander happy by obeying him?
Sure, sure. And I did find along the way a lot of good Christian guys and gals. Not Lutheran even all the time.
Right.
And I found a lot of Presbyterians, especially, who really love Martin Luther.
Yes, there's been among the Reformed, there's been a renewal of looking back at Reformation theology. In fact, right near us here at Concordia Seminary, we have Covenant Seminary, which is a Bible-believing seminary, and they're very interested in Lutheranism, and as you well know, some of the graduate students from there have been over here.
Mm-hmm.
And we've really interested in particularly a few of them that were doing their doctorate that I found so... Ken Bailey, for example, on parables. I think you even read his
books. I've got
the
books.
Yes, we all have his books. Because he did something nobody had ever done before. As a Presbyterian professor, he just so happened to be teaching at the seminary in Beirut, Lebanon. Was there 20 years when I first met him. And he had the practice of going out into the field, the villages, talking to people who were unable to read and write, but were very intelligent, and talking to them about these parables and asking them, what do you think they mean? And coming up with some spectacular understandings, because they're living in that kind of a culture
mm-hmm.
that you and I would not have thought twice about in thinking about. Though the one that really strikes me, of course, is the prodigal son, that if a son ever really did tell his father to divide the inheritance with me, he would be beaten. Because it's like my telling my father, who was an insurance salesman, Dad, you know, how long is it before I get the insurance money?
Yeah.
Which is another way of saying, you know, haven't you been on earth long enough and I need this money? I've got some plans. It's really just really interesting that that book has been so enlightening for so many people in opening up the parables into areas that law and gospel just fits so well in. Our numbers here are 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. This is Open Line Friday, and we promise to open our lines to our callers. So we'll begin to do that now in talking to James.
Hello, Pastor.
Hi, James.
How are you tonight?
I'm doing good. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. And your guest, Pastor?
Pastor Norton.
How are you, Pastor Norton?
I'm just dandy, but I'm hungry.
Okay. All right. Well,
yeah, we walked
right
in and Buzz is cooking here on the microwave, and boy, oh boy.
Well, I have a question for you, Pastor Norton, and I also have one for you, Pastor Baker.
Well, I don't know if you're allowed to.
Well,
we'll make an exception.
Okay. Well, I'd like to ask Pastor Norton, you know, what is the proper understanding of nationalism from the two kingdom perspective? Like when we act militarily for God and country, are we not mixing the two in that? And for you, Pastor, I'd like to know the difference between an Amish Christian and a Quaker Christian. And could you define pacifism for me and tell me if that's a Christian doctrine?
Okay, you want to stay on?
Yes, I'll stay on.
Okay, we'll go to Jim first. The proper view of nationalism.
I never thought of nationalism from the religious point of view. Nationalism from the secular point of view is not a problem. You just you love your country. So as a soldier, to espouse nationalism is to say I love my country, and so that's why I'm serving. I really don't know how I would put it in a religious
viewpoint. How would you do that, James?
Well, you know, during history, during times in the past, you would hear the phrase "for God and country." I was wondering if that's a nationalistic. It seems like that's a nationalistic phrase or a nationalistic assertion, and I was wondering if that was mixing the two kingdoms when you would act for God and country.
That is the motto on the chaplain crest, Pro Deo et Patria, for God and country. And you're simply serving your God and your country at the same time. I never thought about that as being nationalistic. But you're serving both at the same time as a chaplain.
Okay, so then you are mixing the two kings.
Well, I guess if you want to say I am, I am. I've never thought about that way. I love my God and I love my country, and I'm serving both in one office, the office of a pastor/chaplain.
Okay.
So
now, when you say they're mixing the two kingdoms, normally when we talk about mixing, that means an error.
Yeah.
A mixture of law and gospel. Jim isn't really mixing them. In fact, Todd on Issues, Etc. had a really good insight and a program recently on these two. He said we're all really for the distinction between church and state. And I'm paraphrasing him, but the one example he gave, James, was, I don't think anybody wants the government to tell me what I have to preach from the pulpit. And I don't think anyone wants pastors, like the Pope did at the Middle Ages, telling the government who they should arrest and why people should be in prison or who should be killed for false doctrine. That is what we mean by keeping the two kingdoms separate. The point Todd was making, therefore, is in some sense, apart from those extremes, wherever you land, you're going to be thinking somebody is confusing the two because they don't agree with your particular point of view.
Okay.
And so when we talk about nationalism, that is just a love for country that God has placed in us. And we don't have any problem thanking God at Thanksgiving, for example. Even the country does that, for the wonderful bounty that he has given and the supplies. And on the other hand, we also don't have any problem in going to war against an enemy that is trying to kill us, in the sense, therefore, that we're defending us. So I don't think that's really confusing the two kingdoms. It's really keeping them separate.
Okay. I guess when I say mixing, it's not confusing. From a historical point of view, I remember reading about the Manifest Destiny, and that's a kind of saying that God has a part in what you're doing nationalistically. You see what I'm saying?
In other words, for the chaplain to tell a soldier that fighting in Vietnam is definitely the will of God, you would say is questionable. And I think Jim would also.
Okay.
Because we do believe in conscience. For example, the example I often give, Jim, is if a soldier came to me and said that he feels that he cannot fight in a particular war, the question I would ask is why? And so let's say I'm talking to you and I say, well, Pastor Norton, the Bible says thou shalt not kill, and therefore that's why I cannot be a soldier. How would you respond to that?
Well, the person obviously is thinking about going conscientious objector. And once you're in the military, you can't do that. Because when you come into the military, you have to tell them what your religion is. And at that point in time is when you are to say if you are a conscientious objector or not. And so if your religion says you cannot fight, that's fine. But to change your mind at some point in time and say, well, I've changed my mind now, I can't fight, I can't carry weapons,
which fits in just what James was asking to me, the second question, what a Quaker is. James,
and an Amish Christian also.
Okay, an Amish is really out of the Mennonite faith, and they're a branch of that, whereas a Quakers really was founded by a George Fox in the middle 1600s. Mm-hmm. And they believe in plainness of dress and good manners, religious worship, but they are specifically opposed to military service. So that would be a difference between the two.
Okay, and when you define pacifism for me, Pastor, could you tell me whether that's a Christian doctrine or not?
Well, how would you understand it, first of all? Because your pacifism may not be another person's pacifism.
Well, I would think that it's defined by the thou shall not kill type of thing. But I'm not the theologian, so that's the layman's point of view.
Well, but God also says that the soldier is a high office. It's a good thing for people to do that. He doesn't condemn it anywhere.
Yeah, that's interesting that when you gave me the answer, Pastor Norton, that you talked about offices. That's real interesting. I'd like to hear more about that motto, God and Country, after Pastor he usually makes me answer my own question. I think that's what he was trying to do. But once he
defines
pacifism for me, I'd like for you to talk a little more about that motto, God and Country.
Okay, well, thank you, James. And we'll discuss a little bit. We're almost at the end of the hour, and if others are going to call, we're going to have to hold up over the break a little bit. Pacifism is really the teaching that is in opposition to all war and armed hostility. It really believes that national and international disputes should be settled by peaceful means rather than by force or war. And that's where we would disagree with the Romans 13, where it says he does not hold the sword in vain. Yeah. How do you understand that, Jim?
Yeah, that's precisely what I was referring to, that sometimes the sword has to be used by the government to protect the citizens. There are some bad people out there, and if you just roll over and play dead, they'll steamroller you and all of your people. And we can't allow that, and that's why President Bush is taking the fight to the terrorists, because he took a promise or made a promise to protect the country. And sometimes you have to send people off to war in order to do that.
Some people would say, though, if we believe in Jesus, who says, love your enemies, how can we, therefore, at the same time, love them while we're trying to kill them? Isn't that a contradiction?
Well, we can love them later.
Uh-huh.
Well, in essence, we do.
That's right.
After World War II, we defeated the Germans and Japan and went back in and helped them on their feet again.
Well, as a chaplain, when you would have a wounded soldier brought into your area who was an enemy...
We take care of him.
You take care of him.
Of course.
And so the love is still there.
Uh-huh.
But there is definitely this first use of the law, and that's why war is really a law and gospel point of view. The first use is curb. And what is the curb use, Jim?
To curb violent outbursts, that'd be a function of the military.
That's correct. Sure. And God did that even in Canaan, where he went against... Well, can you believe that? We're halfway done already.
Wow, that was fast.
That is fast. Well, James, we want to thank you. If anybody else has further questions, we're going to get to you when we get back from the break at 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. You have two pastors, double the power. I'm Tom Baker and James Norton. Stay with us through the break.
Next time on the Bible study, based on Ephesians chapter 4, a discussion about, among other things, unity. Paul says, make every effort to keep the unity of the Spirit through the bond of peace. Let's talk about unity, something that has seemed to escape the church. Pastor Nathan Metter of Zion Lutheran Church in Staunton will be our guest Monday morning, 10:05. The Bible Study on AM 850 KFUO is underwritten by Concordia Christian Books and Gifts, serving God's people.
America may be the last best hope. And on the next Focus on the Family, Dr. Bill Bennett tells Dr. James Dobson why. In the midst of terrorist threats, we all need this reminder of the great heritage passed down to us by the Founding Fathers. A patriot discusses his love, his fears, and his hopes for a blessed nation. On the next Focus on the Family.
Weekdays at 9:30 on AM 850 KFUO.
The many health problems caused by abortion. Details are next on today's Creation Moment. And now, here's our Creation Moment host, Ian Taylor.
Over the past several years, scientific studies of women have shown that those who have had an abortion increase their risks of infertility, breast cancer, and other problems. Now a new study, released by the Population Research Institute, reveals a whole new category of risks associated with abortion. The researchers learned that young girls from 15 to 18, pregnant or not, for those who have had an abortion, the chances of major depression rises from 31% to 78%. The same pattern appeared for anxiety, where for young girls who had had an abortion, the likelihood of anxiety neuroses were doubled. The pattern also showed a doubled rate of thoughts of suicide for girls who had had an abortion as compared with those who became pregnant but did not have an abortion. A similar study of women in New Zealand had the same results. Two studies by the Elliott Institute showed that women who had had an abortion were three times as likely as those who had not to be plagued with anxiety and to abuse drugs. These studies show, scientifically, that it is time to stop accepting the mental health of the mother as justification for abortion. Researchers find that abortion causes mental health problems. It does not prevent them. More than this, of course, abortion is contrary to God's will because it takes a life.
Creation Moments is offering a free copy of the book Straight Answers to Tough Questions to anyone who gets in touch with us. Call 1-800-42-BIBLE and ask for your book today. And join us again next time for another Creation Moment, proclaiming evidence of God's truth.
Here at AM850 KFUO, we enjoy receiving mail from our listeners. Here's something that we received from Heather in San Diego. She says, I just discovered that I could listen to Issues Etc. podcasts while I drive, which I seem to do a lot, taking my kids to and from school. I appreciate both having a substantive program to listen to in the car and also a program that is good for my kids to hear. Why don't you email us? You'll find our addresses, both for traditional and email, on our website at kfuo.org. Let us hear from you.
Join Paul Clayton for Living Jubilee live Monday through Friday at 11:05 on AM 850 KFUO. I'm Diane Summers. While I vacation, he'll keep you informed about local history, cooking, gardening, and how to speak of your faith to people you care about. You'll enjoy the lighthearted banter and good company on Living Jubilee Monday through Friday at 11:05 on AM 850 KFUO.
Tom Baker and Pastor James Norton from Nokomis, Illinois. I actually heard the station up there last Sunday morning.
Oh, Litchfield. WSMI?
No, KFU.
Oh.
Heard this station. We're on AM 850 KFUO, Jim.
Yeah, I know. You didn't specify.
And I was surprised because the last time I was in that area, I couldn't hear it. So I guess it depends on weather patterns and... It's not that easy sometimes
to
get it that
far
out.
Yeah, I don't always get it.
Yeah.
On a car radio, it's easier.
I know. I had a friend in Mason City who would actually go sit in his car up on a hill near where he lived when he wanted to hear this. It was kind of interesting. We're here to answer any of your questions. You have with us a retired chaplain colonel of the National Guard, James Norton. And weren't you kind of head... In Illinois?
I was a state chaplain for 10 years.
Okay. That's interesting. And so even though you were with a congregation, you had to leave, what, about once a month on weekends?
Probably twice a month, usually, for different things.
Right.
And then the summertime, you had to go to guard camp or somewhere else. I'd sometimes travel with a general to go see troops someplace.
Mm-hmm.
Just a lot of stuff.
Interesting. Well, you're retired now and enjoying the good life, and
yep.
They're taking care of you. I know that. When we left, we were talking about this whole curb use of the law and why we aren't pacifists. Maybe we can talk a little bit about, from a law gospel perspective, we have a much more negative view of a human being in his natural condition than do other individuals and other religions. I would say that we don't think man is basically good, but man is really evil, and that's why he needs a Savior.
Well, and we agree with the Apostle Paul in Romans 3.
Who, and what does he say there?
Oh, lots, Tom.
Yes. I've read it occasionally.
Yeah, I know. Well, he simply says that all have sinned. There's no one that does good, no, not one. And that's a pretty comprehensive, all-encompassing condemnation for the human race. So
I don't know how many times I read that until recently a professor pointed out to me that that includes Christians.
Yeah, and pastors.
Yes. Well, is there a distinction? Oh, we're going to get in trouble now. Okay, you got the Christians out there, and then you got the point that we're talking about is that by our natural ability, even a Christian is unable to do good without the opportunity to have the Holy Spirit moving in him.
Right, right.
So that why are, if we think people, if we have such a negative view of people, then why do they seem at times to be acting pretty good?
Because of the Holy Spirit.
Well, I'm talking about unbelievers.
Oh, unbelievers. Well, there you got to talk about civic righteousness as opposed to religious righteousness, I suppose.
Yes, and one of the differences we make of that often is motivation. Two people can do the same outward good deed, like stopping at a stop sign. But the unbeliever is always doing it out of self-interest. Whereas a believer partly is doing it because of his love for Christ, which alone is the proper motivation from God's point of view.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what I have found just fascinating is that when things fall apart, like a riot in the city, it doesn't matter if you're overseas or in the United States, people just begin to act naturally in breaking into stores, beating other people up. Isn't that correct?
Yeah, and when we came to town today, I got off the freeway. We had to go to get something to eat, and I'm a country boy.
Uh-huh.
And I wasn't in a big hurry.
Right.
And I came to the stop sign at the bottom of the hill, and I was looking around for the place to eat, and I heard a horn honk.
Mm.
I heard this guy in a delivery truck behind me. He was in a hurry.
Yes.
And so he gave me the horn.
Yeah.
Now, I would never do that. Because I'm a country boy and I'm not in a hurry, and also because I just don't do that.
Yes.
That's neither.
You didn't see that I was the one driving the delivery
truck. No.
I'm a city boy, and God would never put horns in a car unless you're supposed to use them. So it's people like you that drive us city boys nuts.
We honk at deer on the road.
Oh, you do?
Oh, yes.
Well, there is some areas, where was I when I was traveling, that it was illegal to honk unless it was an emergency.
Huh.
I think it was in a city area and it was noisy, you know, if you were honking all the time. And unless you had a really good reason, you could give a ticket for honking your horn. I found that really kind of neat.
That's like thou shalt not spit on the sidewalk.
Yes. I'm kind of the guy who, if I had my opportunity, I put one of those big truck horns on my little car. And, you know, somebody not walking across fast enough. See, that's the way I'm built. And so I keep telling people, if I was not a Christian, would I have a different lifestyle?
Yeah.
I really would, because it's just an awareness on my part that I feel I could get away with a lot of things. When you're in the middle of a residential area and there's a stop sign and it's 3 a.m. in the morning.
Nobody there.
Yeah. Why would you ever stop if you weren't a Christian? I've never figured that out.
Well, I know where my church is in the country, it's a four-way stop.
That's right.
Nobody stops.
Yes.
Except me.
Yes, except you. So we're talking about your wife, Sam. She doesn't stop?
Well, she cruises through.
Yes, she cruises through. And it is a desolate area. Now, I think more people would stop when the corn is up because they can't see around the corners. Although at that particular intersection, you don't have that problem because you have a cemetery on the one side.
Yes. They slow down.
Yeah, they slow
down.
Well, what surprised me coming up, and this was Sunday morning before 8 o'clock, and there was this big 18-wheeler going the other way. And he pulled over to let me pass, but he almost went off the road.
Probably a grain truck.
Is that what it was?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. In fact, I did notice a lot of people were out that morning. Is it harvest time?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
But not on Sunday morning.
Not on Sunday morning. Well, no, your church was packed because Holy Communion took such a long time to go through. And yeah. I always can tell that. In fact, the way your church has like about four different sections. And I look out, oh, the section is done. And I'm thinking it's all done. And then a whole another section starts coming up. So, and then I kind of guessed it was harvest because even though I gave you the sermon text, every hymn was a harvest hymn.
Ah, yes, that time of year.
So we included that in our prayers. And by the way, how is the harvest up there? Is it better than normal years, worse, or about average?
Not as bad as they thought it'd be because of the shortage of moisture.
Yes.
And the beans were better than the corn.
Okay. In other words, those who grew beans had more per acre.
Well, they all grow beans and corn.
Oh, they do.
But the beans mature later, so they got the later rain.
I see. So the corn wasn't that good in your area?
Average.
Yeah.
Average to above.
That has an impact, doesn't it, on your treasury?
If it does, I don't see it.
Oh, really? Interesting.
I don't take care of the money.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. You were a seminarian assigned to my congregation. That's right. And I felt very strongly about that also. Getting back, though, to the law gospel, the various uses of the law, sticking with the curb use, it's fascinating to see that if you take away the curb use of the law, and that's what a secular society kind of does, because they feel we can't judge people no matter what they're doing, unless it, for political purposes, is to their advantage to really put somebody down.
Mm-hmm.
But it's kind of interesting that war, therefore, is in a sense a first use of the law, a curb use, is it not?
Right. Well, on the part of the government.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. The church doesn't get involved in that, of course.
Now, the church is involved because you're a pastor and you're involved, but as a chaplain. You told me once, and I could hardly believe that, that when you go into a war zone, you're not allowed to carry a pistol or a gunfire?
Chaplains are non-combatants.
But the enemy doesn't know that.
I know. And if the enemy is not a signer to the Geneva Convention, then all bets are off. No chaplain captured in Korea came home alive.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
But
if you pick up your weapon, a weapon, as a chaplain,
right,
you therefore nullify your status. In our view.
Okay, I'm a little confused. If you're dealing with an enemy that hasn't signed the Geneva Convention, then are you permitted to carry a pistol?
No.
Well, how come?
We never carry a weapon.
Is that right?
Now, some chaplains feel, and we've talked about this in chaplain circles.
Oh, I bet you have.
If push comes to shove and a lot of guys are falling around you and you feel that you can pick up a weapon and help protect them.
Yes.
Some would, some wouldn't.
Well, I never realized that. That's really a sort of pacifism.
Well, no, it's just a realistic situation. The bad guys are coming, and
yes.
Do I want to die and keep the promise I made? Not a promise, but, you know, maintain my status?
Yeah.
Or do I want to help my guys who are in a real bad situation here?
Yeah, I think I would drop out of the chaplain mode during that time and become a soldier. Because when you're trained, don't you fire guns and such? Aren't you trained in that?
I did, but then I wasn't a chaplain.
Oh, really? So
chaplains aren't supposed to fire weapons at all.
Even in training?
No.
I didn't know that.
No.
Well, talk about a distinction between church and state there.
That's pretty good.
That is pretty good. Boy, I would. Before I say anything more, why don't we go to Palm Bay, Florida, and talk to our good friend Matt there. Matt, did you know that?
No, I didn't, but I think I missed what you were talking about.
That chaplains are not allowed to carry firearms in war.
Oh, yeah, I did know that.
At any time.
At any time. In fact, when they go in to become a chaplain, they're not even trained in firearm use.
Yeah.
You knew that?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Former military, huh?
No.
No?
Okay. It's just one of those things.
How can we help you today, Matt?
Well, recently, and since you have a former, was it Army?
Yes, sir.
It was Army. Since you have a former Army chaplain, and since, well, let me start at the beginning. A couple of weeks, it's that time of year where stewardship is on a lot of churches' tongues, and the LCMS is as well.
Budget time.
Yeah, exactly. And recently, Pastor Held had a bunch of us at the men's group.
Yeah, I need to tell Jim that your pastor's Gary Held.
Yeah.
Another one of our seminarian field workers that were assigned to me. And
he's been indoctrinated then. Okay.
Go ahead, man, and just ignore that.
He's got... yes, he's a Bakerian, whatever you want to call it. But he took us through how to turn, because that's one of the, probably the number one thing that everybody's shoulders sink and they go, oh, here we go, the stewardship again. Oh, I can't wait till this is over.
Now, he and I just talked about this over the phone at length about a month ago.
Oh, really?
So
that
I'm going to be
real. The time that he pulled, it was great what he did. He actually took the whole thing around and he turned it so that it was, instead of it being the heavy law burden, it was a great, a gospel distinction on the entire thing.
How did you do that?
Oh, well, what happened, what I remember most, was when we came to the widow and the widow's mite, where the widow comes up, and the common interpretation is that she comes up, and she, with a dour face and really sad, puts her two little coins on the top of everything, and then Jesus goes, oh, see, she gave all that she had. And everyone always interprets that as like, well, okay, now she's going to go off and starve.
Yeah.
Well, he said no, and he can't wait to get to, and I can't wait to get to heaven and find her either and ask her this. He said, the reality is most of the widows like that, they knew how to beg. They knew how to get food. It becomes a way of life. It's not that they're going to go and starve. She knows where she can go to get something to eat. She knows how to do this. But the reality is she could be trouncing around up and down in front of the temple every time there's worship and go, oh, I really wish I had something that I could put in there. And then she prays to God that she can get something, and one day she's looking through and finds some coins and goes, oh, now I've got something. And she goes up and she, as part of worship, because that's what it is, now she has something, and that's the real reason that Jesus, or could be the real reason that Jesus points her out. She brings this up in joy because she prayed to God to have something to give to her,
uh-huh,
or give to, or give in worship like that. And that made a lot of us, our jaws drop, because he's right. You know, it's as valid an interpretation to go that way as it is to go the other way, because the text doesn't really tell us that she's going to go off and die now, or you know, the kind of, it's a law kind of thing. You know, you just got to sacrifice to your, well, no, she could have prayed to God and God.
Yeah, till you suffer.
Yeah, exactly.
And therefore, the cross is just an example for us. And insofar as we suffer like he did, then we get heaven as he promised.
Yeah, that's, of course, the law heavy. Yeah.
Could I make a comment?
Yeah.
No, Jim, you're just sitting here. And
well, I've got to say something on this one. I always look at that one as she gave everything she had, but I point out then that she trusts in God that he will take care of her.
Mm-hmm. Which is the whole point of her praying and saying, God, please give me something, you know, that I can put in with the, so that I can get in line with the rest of them and do their. And of course, that's her believing. I mean, because in order to even open your mouth and pray that, you'd have to believe that God would could do it. It's the same reason we say, God, have mercy. Why would we say, have mercy, if we didn't believe that he would?
Or if we didn't believe we needed it.
Yeah.
Now, there's no reason for someone who's not a sinner to say, God, have mercy.
Right? Yeah. Yeah, there's no reason at all, because of an unbeliever doesn't believe anyway. And even if he sort of believed, like the third man with the one talent, remember we had a discussion about that.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, well, he believed in the master, but he didn't believe, what he believed about the master was so weird and ridiculous that...
It reminds me of a story I heard. I'm not sure it's true or not, but a mother had a son who was a soldier, and he defected for a time, didn't want to go to fight, and then the commander was going to punish him. And the mother asked for mercy, and the commander said, this is really interesting, he said, he doesn't deserve mercy. And the mother responded, if he deserved it, it wouldn't be mercy.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah. Well, the reason that I called up...
Yes, go ahead.
...is to see that probably second on the list after stewardship is evangelism. Oh, they're going to start another evangelism program. Oh, I don't know if I can. It's just really not my thing, you know, to go out and
Thursday night
and talk. Yeah,
knocking on doors.
I'm assuming that Pastor Held talked to you about that then, because that's when we do it. And I thought I've looked at it, but I thought maybe I'll turn to some experts and I'm going to ask him as well. How do you take and turn a text like at the end of Matthew, the Great Commission, and bring that into a gospel perspective? Because he says, I command you, teach them to obey everything I've commanded you. You know, it's law. It could, and everyone, that's the reason that everyone looks at it that way. It's a heavy burden. But there's got to be a way to go at this gospel-wise. You know, in the same...
Where do you see the law?
Well, I mean, he says, all authority in heaven and earth has been given to me. Therefore, go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit.
Okay, have you heard any law up to there?
Well, the old man hears law.
How so?
Because now we have to get up and go out, and we got to go knock on doors, and we got to spread the word, and oh my goodness. Because that's the way my old man reacts.
Okay.
But I can tell you the reason that I look at it differently is because I've gotten to where, you know, every little thing that I see, and you said this, the five-year-old, if you ask a five-year-old, what have you done to make your mother and father smile today? Well, I don't know. Well, most five-year-olds would have no clue. But the reality is the five-year-old ate the food that they were given and slept in the bed that they were
mm-hmm.
given, and so those things make the parents smile. When you go at this from that direction, God's given me this message to give out that I have picked up for me, and I go, oh, well, who else can? This person can have it too, and this person can have it.
Yes.
Now, the thing is that's an experiential thing with me, so I really need to turn to Scripture rather than just say, well, this is the way I look at it. Let's see what Scripture says about it. That's the reason that I ask.
Well, let me give you a real valid example. I just had a grandson a couple of years ago, and I'm looking to getting a granddaughter in January. Now my daughter's pregnant again. When I read this, God is... It sounds like it's a command, but I don't see it as a burden. I see it as a privilege that within a short period of time after the birth of that daughter, she is going to be adopted into the family of God through baptism.
Yeah.
Now, that to me is really, really good news. It would be like all these folks from Mexico that are illegal aliens... that the Congress would say, all authority has been given to us, go therefore and make them nationals of this country by having them sign this, and they are all free to work here and become citizens. Now, if you really wanted that to happen, can you imagine the joy that they would have? Now, I'm talking in a secular sense, because obviously that might not be a very good idea for all kinds of... actions, but somebody who is really pushing to have these people, maybe they're their relatives or their friends, and then they hear this good news, this is not a burden to therefore go out and tell them, here's how you can become a citizen, or here is how you have become a citizen. That's even better said. God is giving us the privilege of announcing to people what God has done in order that they might be children of Him.
Yeah, that's the way. I'm glad you bring that word privilege.
It's not a responsibility in the sense of a burden.
Yeah.
It's a response ability. God gives us the ability to respond joyfully in telling them the best news that could ever happen. It's kind of like, think of yourself as a doctor, Matt, or Jim when he was a chaplain. I bet you had a lot of parents phone you about soldiers, sons and daughters that you were treating or counseling and wondering if they even got through it. They heard they were wounded. How good did it make you feel on those occasions when you were able to phone them back and say, yes, he was wounded, but everything looks like he'll be okay and soon we'll be home?
Oh, hey, that's fantastic. It makes you feel great.
You see, and that's what God
can't
has
wait
given
to
us.
Deliver that good news.
That's how you make what appears to be law. Can you imagine Jim's commander coming to him and saying, okay, you need to phone Mr. and Mrs. Schultz and tell them their son is still alive. And Jim says, I was just going to dinner. Or, you know, hey, I'm going to miss the movie tonight.
I'll do it tomorrow.
Oh.
Yeah, I'll do it tomorrow.
Yeah.
No, he's going to be on the phone.
You bet. You bet.
He's going to be on the phone because, you know, there's no parent in the world. Well, I suppose that one of 1 billion parents, you might find one that goes, oh, well, you interrupted my dinner to tell me that?
Yes.
No, of course not. No, they're going to jump up and down going, really? Really? Ah!
Yeah.
No. I think that he did a really wonderful job with the stewardship part, and I just think that we need to maybe start working on that same angle with the evangelism part, because it really is ingrained in people. They don't want to get out and do. I don't mean just people at my church. I've been to a lot of churches where it's the same problem.
All right. Well, thank you so much for calling, Matt.
You're welcome.
Appreciated that. You know, he makes a great point that a lot of times when we hear a way to respond to the gospel, we become disillusioned because we see it as a burden or something we have to do. That the problem there is not making clear to the people that this response, to make disciples of all the nations, doesn't mean you need to become a pastor. It doesn't even mean you need to be going out on Thursday night. You have a family you can be talking to at dinner, doing devotions, bringing them to Sunday school, bringing them to confirmation. How many of your members refused to bring their kids to confirmation because they thought they could teach them better than you did?
Not many.
I don't remember anybody in my ministry.
No.
So that's how you do that, in bringing to others the good news of Jesus Christ. Well, believe it or not, we have less than a minute.
Ooh.
Do you have anything else to say?
Been fun.
It sure has, Jim. I really appreciate you being here. And I know your congregation, after I preached last week, appreciate you being back. And next time when you ask me to preach, make sure it's the Sunday they have the big meal rather than reserving it for yourself.
And non-communion.
Non-communion. No, I love communion. I'm Tom Baker, and this is James Norton, pastor. You can hear him, by the way, when are your worship services Sunday?
Sunday at 10 o'clock.